Hey, welcome tonight. My name's Pete. I'm on staff here and so excited to see you all back. I have been doing campus ministry my whole life, really, just about. But this year's a little bit different than any other year that I've ever been here. And that is because I actually, for the first time, had to drop my daughter off at college last Thursday, like your parents had to drop you off last Thursday. And that was hard. She wrote me this awesome letter, and my wife an awesome letter, and she's just kind of cool that way. And so we sat in the truck, and we just cried. And it's given me a heart for you even more. I feel like our staff and myself, that's why we do this. It's because we have a heart for you. We want you to feel as if this is a place that you can call home. And I know for a lot of you, it took a lot of guts and a lot of intestinal fortitude, as my coach used to call it, to come up those steps and to come through these doors. And I just want you to know, even if you're a little bit freaked out right now, this is what we want for you, is to just be a place where you're safe, where you're welcomed, where you're loved, where you're accepted. We want you to know that. We want you to feel that. We want you to be aware of that. Okay? And if you're a guest with us, please be. If it's your first time with us, be a guest. And this is some new language I want to use this year, is this idea of being a guest and being a guide. And if you've been here before, would you find somebody that's a guest and just help them along? Would you be a guide for them? This is how this works, guests and guides. And we're going to do this all throughout the course of this year. And I want to also, right out of the gate, just want to make it very clear to everybody here that this is not just a Christian gathering. This is a place where everybody, the word encounter there, we named it that because we want everybody to be able to take one step closer to God. And some people might be really far from God. Some people might be really, really experienced in church, and that's great. And I think that if we can make this experience with God one that is a true encounter, that we just lift him high enough, I really believe it's going to be applicable to everybody. And so I have a special heart for the people that might be just a little bit more on the other end, that are just not too comfortable with church. I want them here. Would you know that? And would you invite those people and let them know that they're welcome? All right? That's just a little business to get out of the way. All right. Hey, I want to start by talking about something really boring, sounding boring, but it's good. Actually, it's really good. The National Gold Reserve Act in 1934 was established. The National Reserve Gold Act. What in the world is that? That is where the National Treasury said, what we want to do is we want to collect all the gold back from all the individuals. We want to buy it all back. And so they started this act, and it was in place for like almost 40 years, and then in 1975, they were closing the window on it, and they really wanted to get like one last-ditch effort to get everyone's gold. And so what they did is they said, I think gold was $20 per ounce at the time, and they said, we're gonna give you $35 per ounce for your gold. And everybody was like freaking out about this awesome deal. And the only way back then that you could actually do this and exchange your gold is you had to go to a bank physically. I know it's like impossible for us today. You go, what's a bank? And we'd walk. They'd have to walk into this bank, and there would be a teller behind a window. And then you'd go up to this teller, and you'd exchange your gold for your cash. And this window, that space, was referred to at that time as the window of opportunity. That's where we get that term, window of opportunity. It was a time where you had to really jump in on it while it was good. Kind of like, you know, we all wish we could have jumped in on, I don't know, the Pokemon phase or something and got some cash for that, or I don't know, like back about a month or two ago. Opportunity, a window of opportunity. This is what I really want us to focus on here for the next 5 weeks. What we did is we polled some of our alums, and we asked them, what were the most significant opportunities that you needed to take advantage of? And you know, in college, you've got a ton of them to take advantage of now. And there were five major ones that kind of came up that we want to share with you, the five big opportunities that you should take advantage of while you're here. And tonight, opportunity number one is, and by the way, we got a window here, as you can see. And it's just our attempt to have a metaphor, much like the metaphor of the teller window. This is just our metaphor, just an opportunity for you to remember. There's an opportunity tonight we want to talk about. And that opportunity tonight is true friendship. True friendship. I don't think there's a person here that doesn't want true friendship. You don't want a true friend. Everyone wants one. I want one. You want one. You're looking for one. You've come to this campus and you're like, man, I don't know anybody. I just like a friend. A true friend. So what I think might be just some healthy advice for you, and some of you who have been here before, let me just be a guide, okay? Let me just start that off right now. If I've been on this campus a little longer, I don't know what you call me, I don't know what kind of a guide I'd be, but 20 years plus, here's some free advice. What I normally see is people coming onto this campus, and they kind of feel like if they're just going to go through the motions, maybe by chance, true friendship's just going to find you. Not going to happen. You got to dive in. You got to buy in. You got to invest. You got to be intentional about trying to find true friendship. You got to take advantage of the window that's before you, the window of opportunity. If you don't, you're going to just kind of float through. You're going to float through your classes. You're going to float through your day. And somebody's going to invite you to a party, and you're going to go, and you have a pretty good time. And then the next time you try to get to know this person, you're not going to really get to know them very well, because maybe the next time you go out with them, it seems like it's always at a party, and that person ends up becoming more of a drinking buddy than they end up really becoming your true friend. You probably don't want to focus on that. So that's all right to go to a party or two. I'm not saying that, but I am saying don't buy into the cheapness of what that kind of a friend might be. I think you probably want more than that. As the semester goes on, you're going to need somebody to study with. Somebody that's going to be next to you is going to be like, hey, let's study partners, right? We move from buddies to partners, and it gets like serious. So we're gonna be a partner. So let's be a study partner, and that's going to be cool. But after a while, quizzing them on calculus, it's just like, you know, this isn't really what you're all looking for either, is it? It's all right. Studies are cool, but, well, no, they're not. Then maybe you're going to, you know, by October, you're going to say, man, this dorm life and the availability of all this food is kind of starting to affect me a little bit. I need to work off some pounds. And somebody's going to be like, yeah, me too. And then you're going to get a workout partner. And it's going to be great. And you're going to have that for a while. Again, we're in the partner phase. And that's good. But it's not enough. If that's all they are. And then in the Christian world, we're not any better. In the Christian world, we got these things called accountability partners. That sounds fun. let's get together and make sure that we're not sinning and stuff like that. I don't know. It's a weird phenomenon. But it happened to me when I was in college. I had a buddy, a couple of my friends, excuse me, that we got together and we said, you know what, it'd probably be good if we didn't sin as much. And we got some struggles, and so I shared some of those struggles with these guys. And my friend Sam, just, you know, this typical dude, he was like, I know what's gonna work. Next week we come back, if you screw up, I punch you in the chest as hard as I can. And I'm like, yeah, sounds like a good idea. I think that'd be great. So, you know, the next week, you know, people are walking on campus, and he's like, what are these people slugging each other in the chest over here? And they're like, yeah, just Christians. I don't know, just Christians hanging out. So accountability partner, I'm not going to say it's not a great idea. It's not a bad idea. It's an idea. True friend. I think there's more than that. I think we got something that we can learn about true friendship from a story in the book of Daniel. Daniel's a pretty awesome story. It's a long story, but there's this, the first chapter, and it might feel a little bit long, but it's a story. So I think we're gonna follow through that right now. And so let's turn our attention to the screen, and maybe just to kind of keep us alive and awake and whatever. Let's all stand as we read this together. So I didn't put the first two, three verses up there to give you an idea of where we're at in the context of this story. is we've got Jerusalem here. We've got Babylon here. And Babylon came in and they said, we're going to take you over. And they did, and they destroyed Jerusalem. And as they besieged it, as they said, as they captured it, they took the smartest people out and they decided what to do with them. So that's where the story kind of picks up. It says, then the king ordered Ashpenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring into the king's service some of the Israelites from the royal family and the nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, and qualified to serve in the king's palace. And he was to teach them the language and the literature of the Babylonians. Next. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table, and they were to be trained for 3 years. And after that, they were to enter the king's service. Among those who were chosen were some from Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. The chief official gave them new names: to Daniel, the name Belteshazzar; to Hananiah, Shadrach; to Mishael, Meshach; and to Azariah, Abednego. But Daniel resolved not to defile himself with the royal food and wine, and he asked the chief official for permission not to defile himself in this way. And now God had caused the official to show favor and compassion to Daniel, but the official told Daniel, I'm afraid of my lord the king, who has assigned your food and drink. And why should you be looking worse than the other young men your age? The king would have my head because of you. Daniel then said to the guard, whom the chief official had appointed over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, please test your servants for 10 days. Give us nothing but vegetables to eat and water to drink, and then compare our appearance with that of the young men who eat the royal food, and treat your servants in accordance with what you see. And so he agreed to this, and he tested them for 10 days. And at the end of the 10 days, they looked healthier and better nourished than any of the other young men who ate the royal food. And so the guard took away their choice foods and the wine that they were to drink, and he gave them vegetables instead. And these four young men, God gave knowledge, and he gave them understanding of all kinds of literature and learning. And Daniel could understand visions and dreams of all kinds. And at the end of that time, set by the king to bring them into his service, the chief official presented them to Nebuchadnezzar, and the king talked with them, and he found none equal to Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered the king's service, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and the enchanters in his whole kingdom. We can be seated. This is not a story about health food, okay? I want to just start right there. That is a part of the story. What I really want you to first of all understand is how much the story relates to who you are. This really is these four dudes showing up in Babylon, and they're going to Babylon University. They're the youngest. They're quick to learn. They've passed their ACT tests. They're good looking. Look at yourself. And they've come into this place with high expectations to be trained for 3 years, 4 years, so that they could be put in positions of authority. That is really who you are. And that is what the king wanted. And the king, I've got to tell you, we look at this sometimes like, oh, the bad people, they were like poison food or something. No, there was good food. They were trying. They were doing their best to make them great. But I'm telling you, ISU doesn't know necessarily. I love ISU. I think ISU is amazing, and I think they're here to be your friend. But I also think there might be some things that God knows better than ISU. And that's really where Daniel was at. Daniel was saying, you know what? I think there's a few things here that I really want to hold on to. I appreciate all you're doing, guys, but there's a few things I want to hold on to. And there's this really key word in there where he says he didn't want to defile himself. Defile means to make dirty or to just not make perfect or have something that would kind of come in that would just mar it. And he's saying, no. In other words, he's saying, I want to stay true. I want to stay true to the way I was raised. I want to stay true to the North Star that I've set and the compass that's in my heart of what I know is true. I want to stay true to that. And that, and really what that is looking around and saying, I know in my heart what's true. And what's interesting about this is that he ends up picking true friends to keep him true to where he knows he is supposed to go. And it is not just food that he cares about, because this kingdom is coming in and they're wanting to change their food and diet, but they're also wanting to change their names, and they're wanting to change their culture, and they're wanting to change their God. And he comes along, and later in the story, that with these changed names, some of you know the story, Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego, and it comes to this point where it's like, your God or our God? And if you don't do, we'll make it easy for you. If you don't like choose our God, then we're going to throw you in this fire, in this furnace. And they're like, I think I'm going to stay true to my God, and we're going to go in the furnace. That's a different story for a different day, but what I want you to know is that this is bigger than a diet. This is about being true. True to the thing that they knew was bigger than this Babylon University could offer. How about you? What is it? What is it within you that you know is true, that God has called you to? What is it that you know is your north compass, the thing that you know you need to set your life towards? Wouldn't it be cool if you had a few people that shared in that truth, that shared in your compass? Those would be true friends. True friends are people that keep you true to the things you true want to be true to. And so that is really my hope and my prayer for you this morning, this evening. I've been preaching at different churches, as you can tell, lately. The only thing about the story that I find that I wish I knew more of, but I if I'm a betting man, I think it's there, is I'm pretty sure that Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego were probably different types of people, just like you're all at different types, different kinds of people. And it looks to me like Daniel is the leader. Looks to me like Daniel's like, hey, just test us four. And the other four are like, what? I wonder if Shadrach might just have been one of those guys that also had a deep passion and a deep conviction to do the right thing, but he just wasn't vocal enough to lead. And I wonder if maybe he was the kind of person, just like you might be that kind of person, that you know you want to do what the Lord wants you to do. You know that you've got something bigger here than just to get a degree. You know that. But you're just not that vocal of a person, and you're just hoping somebody might step up like a Daniel and be like, yeah, I'm going to attach myself to him. Hey, that's cool. Maybe that's you. Maybe that was Shadrach. I wonder if Meshach might have been one of those dudes that was raised in a home where his mom and dad like did all the right things, and he never really made it his own faith, and now it's his turn to decide whether or not this is going to be his or it's going to be mom and dad's. I kind of wonder if that might be you. Some of you here are just kind of coming in, and you've been raised in a certain way, and you got certain morals, and you got certain idea. You're not sure if this God thing is all yours or not, but you're intrigued, and you see two other people do it, and you might just attach yourself to them. That just might be Meshach, that just might be you. Abednego. I wonder if Abednego is just this dude, just like, dude, what are you guys talking about? I don't even understand this faith thing. This faith stuff, it's foreign to me, but since I don't have a faith in anything else, this looks as appealing as anything else, and I guess I can try it. Try it for a little while, because you guys seem to be pretty gung-ho. I'm going to be honest with you. I just said it at the very beginning of my talk tonight. I have a special heart for those people. I have a special heart for the people that just haven't been raised with maybe as much of a north compass as we've had. That might just really be interested. That need to just be shown. Then invited in. to something greater, something grander, to say, you know what, I think God's got a bigger plan for you than you think you do. I think it's a bigger plan than your education degree. I really do. Really? Yeah. Could we believe in some people, our roommates, the people that we're going to class with, and just see some potential in them and bring them alongside? They don't have to know Jesus yet. That's cool. I'm hoping there are a number of you here tonight that maybe you just got drug in tonight. You're like, I don't know why I'm here. I thought it was class, but I guess this is kind of strange. But hey, glad you're here. We welcome all different stages of people to come into this thing. But I'm telling you, tonight, there is an opportunity for you. Don't check out. We're building to something that is perhaps the most significant moment that you will have for the rest, that will set the course for the rest of your semester, and it's going to be happening in the next 15 minutes. There's an opportunity for you to be a part of some other people in this room that say, I'm going to do this thing this year. We're going to stay true. We're going to be true to something bigger than us, and in the meantime, as we do that, as we chase something big, we're going to become true friends. What I want for you. A lot of you guys know the name of William Wilberforce. He was a politician at the end of the 1700s and the beginning of the 1800s. And he became a Christian early in his career, to the point where he was like, I think I just want to be a preacher. I don't want to do politics. And there was this real difficult time in that moment there where he had to wrestle through, what is it that he's supposed to do? Am I supposed to pursue this politics career, or am I supposed to change it and be a pastor, preacher? He ended up staying with the politician route. And the reason he stayed with it is because he had a deep conviction to change the world. He wanted to change the world because there was something going on in the world that was very wrong to him, but it was not wrong to just about anybody else, and that was slavery. He said, I want to do something about slavery. Now, you have to understand, in that time, there was no debates going on about it. This was not a hot-button topic. This was not like the abortion issue today where you've got a bunch of people mad on this side and a bunch of people mad on this side. It was William and everybody else, because slavery had just woven itself into that culture in such a way that everyone accepted it. It wasn't even considered wrong. And to top it off, it was really connected to the financial security of the country. And if you start messing with that, you really start messing with a lot of people's pocketbooks, and it's an uphill battle. It's like an impossible task. Miraculously, he stuck with it. And this lone voice just kind of got louder and louder, and he ended up gaining a little bit of traction and some momentum. And in 1807, there was an act passed. It was the abolition of slave trade. Now, that's not the abolition of slavery. You could still have a slave, but you just couldn't trade. You couldn't legally buy and sell. But 1 year before he died, 1833, they passed the abolition of slavery. Can't have a slave. And that happened in Britain and grew and spread quickly after that throughout all of Europe. And about a decade later, made its way here to the United States. 1 year before he died, he got to see the world changed through his commitment. Excuse me. And at the end of his life, they asked him, how did you do it? And he had one phrase. Without batting an eye, he had one phrase. He just said, it was a quick answer. He said, it's the Clapham Saints. He said, you see, London has a suburb named Clapham. And that's where I live. And he said, when I became a Christian, I wrestled with becoming a preacher. But the guy across the street from me was also a Christian, and he was a blacksmith. And around the corner, there was a lawyer. And around the corner from that was another guy who was a merchant. And he says, those guys surrounded me. And they told me, you've got a dream that you need to stay true to. You've got a passion for this. You've got to be true to what you were meant to be here for. And he said it was their recommendation that kept me in politics. And he says, but it didn't stop there, because every single week you would not believe how I was badgered and beat up, and everybody thought that they could pick on me because I had the craziest idea of them all. But every week I'd go home, and there they'd be waiting, daily. And they would pray with him, and they would encourage him, and they would support him. And they would send him back, and he'd get beat up, and he'd send him back. And the Clapham Saints were really the source of his strength. I think there's some huge dreams in this room. And I think that it's going to be an uphill battle. I think there's some dreams in this room to be a good mom and a dad and a husband and a wife. But it's not going to just happen. You need some Clapham Saints. You need some people to surround you. They're going to circle you up. They're going to pray for you. They're going to call you out when you're off. When you're wrong, they're going to be like, hey, I'm a true friend. And a true friend keeps you on the true course. And you're off course right now. But man, for the most part, they're going to be a wind at their back, and they're going to be breathing a breath of fresh air to these people. We need Clapham Saints. We need Clapham Saints in this room. About 2 months ago, I got to do a wedding of somebody here from Encounter named Andrew Garcia. We got a picture of his bachelor party. And it's pretty sweet, because some of you guys are here tonight. Some of these people are here tonight. Cody's here tonight. I think Kyle might be. I saw Travis earlier. Of course, Phil there in the middle. Josh in the back. It's pretty sweet. All these guys are from Encounter. And all these guys were at this bachelor party. And I heard numerous accounts from many of these guys that weekend right there was the best weekend of their life. Why? Because they're true friends. And Andrew sat in the middle, and all these guys all the way around, one of the nights, they all sat around, and they're like, Andrew, you've made me great because of this, and when you said this or you did that. And every one of them walked around that room and said, this is how you have changed my life and made me great. And then he returned the favor and said, I wouldn't be sitting here if it wasn't for what you did for me. And guys are all crying. Yeah, guys can cry. And they're all in tears, and it was an amazing night, an amazing opportunity, amazing fruit. Because right here is a modern day group of Clapham Saints. I invite you to that. I invite you to take advantage of the opportunity that's before us tonight. The opportunity, the window of opportunity is open. I'm not going to ask you to do anything with it yet, but I am going to ask you to get your app out, and I want you to look at it. Can you do that for me right now? Let's get that app out, and I want you to look and just open up to where it says small groups. And this year we're going to be doing something a little bit different with small groups. We're going to have them at the same time on Wednesday night and on Thursday night. Guys will be with guys, girls will be with girls. And there might be a preference where maybe you can only do one or the other, but if you can do both, there's an option there on that as well in your app. But here's before anyone pushes a button, before anyone touches anything, I need to ask you something. I know every single one of you want to have a true friend. Are you willing to be one? Because if you're not really willing to be that true friend, you're probably not going to receive as much as you think you're going to receive. Being a true friend really is what produces true friendship for what you can receive later. And so I want to ask you to seriously consider that, and I'm begging you. I really will. Like, this is like one time a year. I don't usually beg. This is one of the times a year I'll do it. I'm begging you to push that button tonight, to just sign up, to be a part of a group that you can actually meet with each week. Not a Bible study that you can show up once in a while, not some kind of a thing that's just kind of a side. No, this is like a committed thing that you get to be present and living, and just a living encouragement to the people around you. So I'm going to pray, and as I pray, after I'm done with that, I'm going to have the band is going to come up, and then you guys will have one last song to close us out tonight. And I just encourage you to press one of those buttons as we go. All right, let's pray. God, I want to thank you for this story in Daniel. I want to thank you how the conclusion of that chapter showed that they were 10 times more wise. They were 10 times better than they were before because they were with people that were practicing true friendship, keeping them on a true course. And God, I'm going to ask that we would start now by committing ourselves to something greater than ourselves, that we would be committing ourselves to the people around us, that we would be trying to make everybody in this ministry great. It's a phrase we use here a lot, is that we want to make each other great. Help us to do that well in the context of your word, in the context of your spirit, the context of a group of people that have a common goal of serving and loving and challenging each other. I ask for the courage for everybody here to be able to just have the bravery to just push that button tonight. It's simple, but it's significant. And we just ask that this window of opportunity would be taken advantage of and not let it slip by. It is in Jesus' name that we pray. Amen.